Welcome to episode 32 of the Pipe and Slippers Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your host, Roger Kirby, back from the dead, and with me, as always, is Mr. Stephen Rudkin.
Good evening, Roger. Great to have you back on the airwaves. I actually struggled to make it this week. I've been down with man flu, as some would call it, but we've been soldiering on.
Yes, so apologies if there is a cough every now and again. I don't have a cough button on my sophisticated equipment, which is a laptop and iPod headphones, but I'll keep going and try and limit the background noise to a minimum. But I'm not dead, so you know, every cloud and all that.
Exactly. Yeah, it would be nice if we had some cough buttons and some fancy podcasting studios each, but I guess that comes down to our listeners and some contributions. You can obviously go to our website page at Podomatic and make a PayPal contribution.
I did. I definitely feel we're getting towards the stage where I feel we need like a title sponsor. I feel like I need to do like a really cheesy read and then reel off a load of things about the financial details at the end, where you just rally through at 100 mile an hour to confuse the listener.
Conditions. About the 15,000% APR.
Yeah. We'll just skip over that fine detail. It's going to bankrupt you.
Yeah. But where are we? We're in the middle of week four after Thursday night's already happened. It's Saturday evening here in the UK. And we got the first of the international series kicking off tomorrow. What were your thoughts from Thursday night?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a compelling game, possibly for some of the wrong reasons. I mean, I've been in a conversation on Twitter with Tony today, and I think I mentioned it to you when we were texting. So you were watching it sort of like 10 minutes behind me, just yeah. The way that our kind of schedules sort of felt when we went to blackout during the day. And I just thought it was a really little sort of inept, insipid sort of coaching game planning display from the Steelers. I don't know if that was just me or what, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it felt like they've obviously got Michael Vick and they've got to still get him involved in learning the offense, and it felt like that they really restricted it way too much and didn't really allow him to even try anything. Then they eventually did let him try run for a first down on fourth and one, wasn't it, in overtime?
It just seemed to be that was, you could see that play a mile off. You could see it was coming. You know, and Bell had ran well all night, but I mean, I know that Scobie had missed those two kicks, but, and I know that, you know, coaches back themselves and 4-1 is makeable, but to roll out, you know, have a QB sort of scramble on 4-1, it just seemed odd when the fact is that, okay, Scobie's missed two, but he was missing them because he was hooking them and pushing them, as opposed to he had the leg to make it. You just give yourselves a shot to win the league. What's the worst? The worst case scenario is that you don't make it and you're in the same position you were if you don't make fourth down, but you've given your shot a chance and a shot to win the game. I just didn't get it. And I thought that, you know, that was really, really sort of timid. And but from the flip side of that, I mean, again, people will probably argue with me, but the more I watch Joe Flacco, the more I'm impressed with the fact he doesn't get flustered. He is just even keel. And I guess there's a little bit of that frustrating that he's not up or down. But in that way, you know, when he has that bad pick, but then he comes and makes the big play at the end. And I thought, to be honest, he was pretty steady all night, considering the fact that his wide receivers aren't getting any separation at all. You know, they lost Steve Smith, who is the one guy that has been a difference maker on that that ball club right from the get-go. You know, they lost Campanaro.
And the Steelers were bringing the house quite a lot. All those intricate blitzes and sending quite a few men, it was not much time for him there.
Yeah, there was a lot of sort of safety blitzes at one point where they were just overloading.
Side, yeah. But yeah, he makes plays when you need him to, and that's why he's got that good playoff record. And he can come back from a pick. He doesn't seem to get too wound up and emotional about things, which is a good trait, in my opinion. But as you said, with Smith going off, the other receivers didn't really do much. But obviously, Aikin made a really nice catch over his shoulder for the touchdown, and what was a perfect throw.
So. He did, and then and you know, they forgetting that they went into the game with the most outstanding, you know, player apart from Smith on that offense had been Crockett Gilmore, or he wasn't even on the field, which is just still a crazy sort of name to kind of get my head around. But bringing it back to sort of the fantasy angle, I went up and picked up Chris Givens in all three leagues there, who they picked up on a trade today from the St. Louis Rams.
They did indeed. Because you look at that receiver core, now you've still got the rookie Perriman is out for an indefinite amount of time. You've only really got Aikin and now Givens, together with a couple of tight ends, is about it, really. So it could be a nice little fantasy move for you there, just on the pure numbers that he's going to be a number two.
Exactly, but I think that in that division and with the out-of-conference and out-of-division schedule that the Ravens has, I think they it's going to be tough for them to come back from 1-3.
Did you pick the Ravens to win on Thursday night?
I'm having one of them did-I-didn't-I moments. I think I must have debated this about 5 or 6 times. I was incorrect. I picked the Steelers to win it.
That is correct. We have 3 out of the 13 in our group picked the Ravens. I guess the only reason I brought it up is because I managed to pick up 10 points there in our Pick'em League for the Ravens win.
Which you are leading at 400 at the moment.
I am. That one pick puts me back, I think, one pick ahead of Ash989.
Excuse me.
Some of these code usernames, I'm not quite sure who they actually are. But we had a 14-2 week from Ash last week. And a couple at 13-3, yourself 12-4 last week, so a better week 3 for you.
Yeah, it was solid. A couple of teams there that sort of let me down. I was convinced that the Chargers were going to go in there and do the business, but that O line and D line was looking pretty shaky from what you reported to me.
Yeah, that was not very good showing there by the Chargers against the Vikings. Lines of scrimmage, both sides were won by the Vikings, and the return of Adrian Peterson to the end zone, which was good to see.
Yeah, I mean the total amount he's lost is that top end speed, but in terms of the way that he hits the hole, and when he does bounce to the outside, he still looks as explosive as he ever was.
Yeah, his cutting ability is still really good. The ball security is still an issue, though, for him.
Yeah, and I think the most disappointing thing about the Vikings as a whole has been the fact that Bridgewater hasn't seemingly taken a step on from last year. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about Chaz Johnson. Obviously, they brought in Wallace over from Miami. And
Wallace has emerged as his number one go-to guy so far this year.
Yeah, but at the same time, Bridgewater hasn't exactly been spraying it around and looking as comfortable as I thought. So
He seems to be really almost floating his passes, like he's undercutting it, and they've got nothing on them. And there's touch passes you need to throw at times. Hint, Cam Newton. You can't throw everything a million miles an hour, but it seems Bridgewater's accuracy is not all there this year.
Yes. So that's just sort of the few of the hot takes. I'm moving forward to this week and some of the games. Obviously, you dropped earlier in the conversation that it's the first one of the three international fixtures this week with the Jets and the Dolphins, and there's been a lot of talk about the Dolphins.
Yeah, they've been hugely disappointing, really. There was a lot of talk this year that the laser offense and Tannehill progression should mean that it would be a really potent fantasy offense as well.
Yeah, and just to, I know that we're talking about the Dolphins here, but have you listened to the Greg Cosell bit on the Ross Tucker podcast this week?
I did not get round to that one, I'm afraid, this week yet.
Well,
on the to-do list.
Well, without going into too much detail and spoiling you, but Greg throws up an interesting sort of philosophical question, and he's not saying either way whether it's right, wrong, or different, but he was questioning whether the simplicity of the Bill Lazor offense, which is essentially a mirroring image of the Chip Kelly offense, has anything, you know, whether there's any similarities there. And then, you know, both of those offenses are seemingly in a bit of, you know, reverse gear, tailspin and struggling a little bit. And he was just wondering whether, because the amount of plays that you run, obviously the playbook has to be a little bit more simple and you know, and shortened down somewhat, and whether there was any, you know, correlation between them, which I just thought was a really, really interesting point. That's something I hadn't really thought of, because you think, oh, you know, Philadelphia Eagles, it's Bradford, you know, and you know, they've overhauled the roster, and it's all because of that. But maybe there's a wider thing to think about, because, you know, the off season was all about, well, it'll only be a matter of time before everyone's adopting the Chip Kelly offense, because it's quarterback proof, and now you've got the laser offense in Miami, you know, the mirror image struggling. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, particularly this last week, it was shown that there's almost no better coach than Rex Ryan at working out a way to adapt to an offense. And obviously his Bills went down there to Miami and really stopped them this week. So,
and
these teams are always learning and evolving. And
yeah, Greg Roman's did a fantastic job down there with Tyrod Taylor, and sort of doing a little bit of what they were doing with Colin Kaepernick at the early days with the 49ers, where they're asking him to, you know, make a few plays with his feet, make a few simple kind of half field sort of reads where he's rolling out, and the reads are well defined and clear for him, and you know, trying to turn the ball over. And if the Bills continue that formula, it's when the Bills are having to play from behind a bit like they did with the Patriots that it becomes a bit of an issue.
And that is exactly why I've actually gone for Taylor this week in the Hall of Lame League. Been having a struggling time with Matt Stafford this season, and he's obviously going up into Seattle this week, so giving Tyrod a go this week.
Yeah, and he's at home
against
the Giants, who haven't looked exactly feisty. I thought they've been functional on defense with the Spagnola, but obviously there's a devoid of action, you know, playmakers, and obviously JPP is highly you know, touted within that the problems and issues that they've got there. But just
sadly,
bringing it, sorry,
just full on the Giants there. I was just going to read. I've just sadly seen that. See, Victor Cruz has had another setback at the practice field this week, and looks like he could be out again after injuring his calf and putting it back again, and he's getting quite emotional.
Yeah, I think what tends to happen is that, you know, these guys that have major surgery, you know, what happens is that, you know, they're reconditioning, they're doing all the rehab, and, you know, whilst their knee is fixed, they tend to pick up a load of sort of other little niggles that they struggle to get. You know, just from my experience within the soccer ball world, you know, guys coming back from, you know, ACL reconstruction, and then they start niggling with hamstring injuries, quad injuries, hip flexor injuries, and all of that stuff. But
I think that's why really keen to see that the Rams go really slowly with Gurley. They introduced him last week, obviously, with, what was it, 6 plays he had. But there's no need to rush him in when you've put a first-round draft into somebody.
No, I think that's an interesting one, because, and then we've kind of gotten away from the Dolphins, which we will circle back to, which we tend to go off at a tangent on the Pipe and Slippers Fantasy Football Podcast. Sorry, it was a bit of Ross Tucker there, where we constantly refer to the podcast in the third person, if that even makes sense. But yeah, Snead and Fisher have ultimately got to deliver this year, have they not? Or, I mean, are they really that Teflon?
I'm not really sure, particularly with the whole uncertainty about whether they stay in St. Louis and whether if you're going to make a move, do you want a whole new setup?
Yeah, you reboot the machine with a move. That would make a lot of sense.
Do you talk about the fact Fisher helped in the in terms of a moving a franchise? What was he when he was at?
Yeah, Houston Oilers, Tennessee Titans,
and so. Is that a good thing to keep somebody like him involved during a move, if that's any relevance? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, or you wonder whether they might look to go for, as opposed to a sort of a, you know, if they do decide to reboot the machine, maybe go after one of the big kind of hitting, you know, whether it's a Gruden or whether it's a Carroll, or one of the established sort of box office type names, and whether they can kind of bring them into Hollywood with the glitz and the glamour, and whether that is tempting. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting, that dynamic between putting the players' interests first and the fact that, well, you know, we need this guy on here producing the goods because we need to run the ball well, because we haven't got a quarterback that's going to be able to, we can put the game on his shoulders, and we've got a defense that's feisty and looking good. Yeah, the Rams are an interesting one.
Top weeks ahead, they're at Arizona this week, and then they go to Green Bay the week after. So
yeah, and those two teams have been putting up points for fun.
1-4 written all over that.
So just before we wrap this this segment off, will Bill Lazor, Philbin, and the rest of the crew still be there if they lose? Given the fact that, to all intents and purposes, a new GM did come in over the summer.
Yeah.
You know, I know that he's not necessarily, the VP of, you know, Vice President of Player Operations in Tannenbaum, but essentially he is the GM with a different title.
And the similarities were there this time last year with the Raiders. They came to London and lost in week 4, wasn't it?
Yeah. And Dennis Allen was bury the ball, didn't they?
Yeah. So, it's hard to say when the international game is such an anomaly, it seems. There's no real home advantage. Do you then, if it's a home loss on your record, do you weigh that more into the fact you should win a home game?
Because I think, Jeff Darlington wrote a really nice piece on NFL.com about, you know, the teams need to look at it more as a road trip game. You know, it's only like, he was saying, the Seattle Seahawks coming across to, you know, New York for a game. And, you know, they treat it more as a jaunt and a sort of...
Yeah. Especially this week, Jets and Dolphins, both East Coast teams, they've only both flown over on Thursday, so the home team normally would come for the whole week lead up. And train here and get used to it, but they've just flown in for 2 days, play the game and get back out. It's better that almost they take it that way. But going back to the issue with the Dolphins,
I think he'll go. I think if they lose, I think they will. They will clean house. I think the GM will go, and Tannenbaum will take over that responsibility and that role and call himself what he will. And I think they will look to bring in a new coach. I think the concern by doing that, though, is that do you stunt? If Lazor goes, and you can talk about the ills of that offense and the way that it's ran, but he was seeming to make a lot of progress last year and moving forward.
Tannehill and his skill set.
The last thing you want to be doing is a new coordinator mid season, so it definitely needs something. I mean, you know, Philbin does get a lot of criticism for being the IBM guy sat in his sort of ivory tower. I mean, you have to watch him on the Hard Knocks series when they were on to know that he's not exactly the big motivational guy, and you feel that's exactly what they need now. I don't know,
I think it really always ends up coming down to the owners and who really has control and power, who their guys really are. I mean, if you look at the Falcons last year, you thought they were going to clean house. Dimitroff hadn't really bought in the guys that you thought he deserved to keep his job. Yeah, and Smith went. There was talk that both of them should just both go. but he obviously stayed. So his relationship with the owner might be different.
And then they start 3-0, and all of a sudden it's so the roster's looking better. Yeah. I mean, it's fickle, isn't it? But
I know. So the overall thing with the Dolphins is, how much is this whole Sue issue with the fact he's supposedly not playing to the script and not really performing? Is that because he doesn't really like the setup? But as an owner, you've bought that guy as a franchise player. Do you listen to him a bit more over your coaches? And you know what, we need somebody in to come in and make the most of Sue on that side of the ball. So it is interesting where the owner and the power, their friends are and who they really like, and you sometimes from the outside you just never know.
No. Watch the space.
Yes, indeed. One thing we do just need to bring it back home to our fantasy leagues here is to listen to the classified results from week 3. Here's your results roundup for week 3 across our fantasy football leagues. In the Move the Sticks League, the Playmakers slipped to a third straight loss, and I quote from owner Tony via Twitter, "My team is absolutely abysmal. No one can score." They lost 53-88 to the one and only Go Bias Industries, spearheaded by Falcons players Ryan and Freeman, a double whammy of a loss for our Cowboys fan Tony. The Fanatics secured a second win in a row, 102-79 over Brothers Niners. 5 touchdowns from number 12 in Green Bay will help anybody win a fantasy matchup. Speaking of Rodgers, New York Bozo lost 66 to the impressive D-Train with 111. David once again hits the 100 mark to get back into winning ways and had a 30-point Steve Smith Sr. on his bench to boot. I've made a huge mistake, lost 103-125 against the Eskimo Bros from Down Under. Both teams now sit 1-2. The Cowboy Crusaders won a second in a row with a 135-75 victory over Scratch and Sniff, thanks to 20-plus points from a collection of his players, including Joe Flacco, Adrian Peterson, Latavius Murray, and Greg Olsen. Finally, Wyatt kept his perfect record alive with a high-scoring win over Danby, 136-129. Once again, Old Man Strength was aided by a stellar performance by the old man himself, Larry Fitzgerald, as well as contributions from AJ Green and Jamal Charles. Wyatt's 3-0 record in the Move the Sticks League is matched by Bootzilla in the Hall of Lame League. The newcomers are the only team with a perfect record in this league, as they took down Zach Stacy's bomb 116-84. The Mannings of Macclesfield got out of the loss column with a 112-104 win over Forest Green. Talking of Macclesfield and Forest Green, this sounds more like a bad conference soccer ball matchup than a fantasy football fixture. However, in a close matchup, the G-Men won their first game of the season and handed Gronk If You're Horny their first loss of the season with a 76-74 win. Cam Newton's high-scoring week helped the Magicians Alliance to a second win in a row, as Tony lost another matchup this week with the Intimidators, 104-95. In the battle between America and Sweden, it was the real Americans American team that won out 128-98 over the Stockholm Stiff Arms. Lastly, in the Hall of Lame, the future Hall of Lamers were embarrassed, I'm ashamed to say, by some Aussie bashing from Unruly Moustache, 54-61. A poor show, really, by both teams in what we will call the low-scoring matchup of the week. In our Dynasty League, the self-titled Pipe and Slippers League, we have two teams with a perfect 3-0 record. They are the Honey Badgers, who went wild in 188 points to 99 victory over Gronk if you're horny. Also, the X Factors have a perfect record following their 119-64 win over Sharky's one. The X Factors making up for Tony's two other teams across our leagues with a 3-0 record. The newly named for a third time, Crunch Time, finally won 79-67 over the One Cheddars. In the AFC Fan Tilt, Dave, the Broncos fan, and It's Like Giving Candy to a Baby won 128-108 over Kenny, our Colts fan, and his deflated footballs. Silent Assassin slipped to a 98-139 loss from the Lombardi Slap, again credited to a certain QB in the NFC North. Finally, the hugely impressive Negatrons won their second of the season with a crushing victory, 163-101 over Anthony's Compromised Underpants. That rounds up all our scores from week 3. Back to you, Roger.
Thank you very much for that, Stephen. More dulcet tones next week.
Very dulcet.
A sarky, snidey little giggle at me then.
Well, I'm getting used to the sound of my voice, so I'm getting quite good at these voiceover sections.
Is that confidence I hear in the air?
After my solo effort last week, which
there was talk of my demise, and it was a power play.
I'm not going to go that far, but maybe you'll see more of it in the future. Maybe some little extra side segments, perhaps. Who knows? So that was week 3 in the books, results wise. We have a few awards that we'd like to give out.
We do.
So I have some nominations for you in the moves of the week. We have a bit of confidence here. Myself, Move the Sticks League. I've changed my running back picks a lot during the week and ended up slipping Freeman in at my flex, 37 points there in Dallas.
After a 11th hour decision.
We'll go with that.
Is it 11th hour?
10th hour? 12th hour? I don't know.
Google will know.
Google will know. My brother was very shocked that I'd left Ingram on my bench, but worked out well in the end. So that's one move nomination. I actually have a couple from the Move the Sticks League. We have the Cowboy Crusaders and Mansell bought Alfred Blewin at his flex position kind of last minute as well. He picked up 19 points, picked him over Melvin Gordon. So good move there for Mansell. In the Hall of Lame League, we are looking at your moves. I put in it as an overall Kansas City over Eagles movement in your lineup. The Alex Smith and Macklin adding versus Bradford and Matthews, which worked out for you in week 3.
It did, and I think on those they were kind of no-brainers, if that makes sense. Still good moves because you need to make them. And I think
you look at the matchups. Chiefs went into Green Bay, so you thought it could be a high scorer. The Eagles weren't playing well, and went into the Jets.
And Alfred Blue again, but he's been the number one back in that offense while Foster is away. So for me, I would have to give it to yourself because Freeman hasn't been that number one back.
Admittedly, it was a little forced in terms of the injury to Coleman meant he was going to get number one carries.
But there's no guarantee that when you bring that guy in, I mean, you know, how many times have we seen it where the number one running back goes down, they bring in the so-called number two and he does absolutely nothing.
And that Dallas defense had been quite stout on the run.
Yeah.
And he did really ball out and
And to be fair, talking of that game, I mean, the Falcons were, in terms of the pass rush as well, was getting a little bit, and maybe that was because Whedon was maybe hanging on to the ball a little bit too long. But it was interesting.
Pre-snap adjustments that a Romo would have as well. Yeah.
So congratulations on Amigo.
Thank you very much. That was about my only shining light this week.
You went 0-3, didn't you?
Apart from that win because of Freeman there. So
you didn't go 0-3, is what you're trying to tell me.
Anyway, I went 0-3 in week 2. That was it.
I knew you had gone somewhere.
Actually won 2-1 this week, in fact. Some mistakes. I've got a huge mistake award. Right. We're going to start in the Hall of Lame. We have Forest Green. They dropped the Colts defense, who were playing the Titans, played the Chiefs defense, who were playing the Packers. That was, could have been a 12 points with the Colts. Got minus 3 with the Chiefs, so...
He's rallying around your place.
Apologies, I should have shut the window. We've got a few drag races going on outside. But yeah, Forest Green lost because of those 12 points to a certain Manning's team at Macclesfield. Once again, Hall of Lame. I struggle really to get moves across all the different leagues, so I've just picked a few as I saw fit. So, James, in a close-scoring match, Gronk, if you're horny, left Steve Smith on the bench. He scored 30 points. He had players Devontae Adams, who got 0, and Chris Ivory, 0 at flex. So Smith would have obviously helped there. And we're going to go back to the Move the Sticks League for the third nomination. And yourself.
Oh, I just can't believe it was there. I'm talking of 11th hour. It was.
11th hour,
it
indeed.
It was right before. Oh, dear.
So to explain the whole story, do you want to
go with it? I mean, I'd picked up Dalton in the week, and everyone knows, where I think most people kind of sit on Dalton, and I'm like the rest, but he's been playing well, receivers are fit. I picked him up, and you pick him up, and you convince yourself that the Ravens are going to win. Well, so if the Ravens are going to win, you put that down as you pick them, then Dalton's going to have a stinker.
Yeah.
So then it's like, I don't need Dalton. So then I'm frantically kind of looking around, and I was thinking, well, Bridgewater should, in theory, even though I fancied the Chargers to win, I fancied that to be quite a high-scoring game.
Yeah.
And typically the AFC battles between the Bengals and the Ravens tend to be less of a shootout and more of a battle of attrition, running game, turnovers and fumbles and this, that and the other. So I think it was probably 5:58. I did the ad drop and I was loving it. Yeah, boom. And then Dalton kind of ran in the touchdown. And then he just went off.
30 fantasy points.
Which would have won me the game.
Over Bridgewater's 2.7.
And for that reason, I'm going to hand it to myself. And the reason I'm handing it to myself is because every single year on this podcast, you will hear me say, you do it and you do something for the right reasons. Do not overthink it. And every year, I sit here and go, why did I overthink that? There we go.
So congratulations to the appropriately named I've Made a Huge Mistake team.
Yes. Clean house this week.
Yep. Good work. Well done, us.
Yes. So just a quick gander at the leagues before we move forward. And one of the things I did want to touch on, and it was interesting because I think I was having a conversation with you and something that your brother had mentioned about... And it was more out of the Move the Sticks League that this was kind of coming from with me. And I was looking at the scoring, and I was looking and thinking, well, hang on, I've done all right here. So I'm 1-2. I'm 294.44, which is the highest scoring average in Division 2. And I looked at how many points it's got. I go, 296.73. And it's very much a case of that you can have a decent team, you can be scoring well, but sometimes, whatever reason, you just seem to come up against the matchups week in, week out that kill you.
Yeah, and the fact that you've scored 100 points again, which is kind of the marker, the par score, and you came up against Eskimo Bros of 125 this week, yet you'd have beaten 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 other teams in week 3 with that score. And you look back to week 2, only 2 teams got over 100. So
yeah, exactly. And then you look at like the league where you know, in Division 1, you've got D-Train with David at 3-3-2-4-2-8-9 against. And yet he's only 2-1, yet he's got 3-3-2. And it's just... so.
Yeah, he came up in week 2 against the Redders Niners, who had the top score of the week, yet he would have... he came third overall in the week points-wise, the D-Train, and would have beaten the other 9 teams.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think the worrying thing that feeds in quite nicely to the next segment is the playmakers with only 183.70.
Yeah, you're not really going to do too well with averaging 61 points a game. You look back to week 3, just 53, which is... handy because he was playing me, but you look at Tony's lineup and he's got a couple of injury issues that have plagued him so far, with the big names Des Bryant and Arian Foster both been missing.
Yes, and he's got Arian Foster tentatively in his lineup as we stand.
Yeah, talking about game time decision tomorrow. Against the Falcons, if he does play and he's back to some form of 90% ability, he should do all right. But
do you think he'll play? Because I've said it. I've said I don't think he will, but that's just a hunch more than... I wouldn't exactly call it insider, sort of Jay Glazer, Adam Schefter sort of information levels.
One, I'd say it seems too early. Two, Blues not doing the worst. I don't know why you would force him back with that type of injury, because that hip groin area, hernia, whatever, can go again, basically.
Yeah, and they're on the...
on the carpet.
Yes.
Down there in the dome. So I wasn't expecting to play. I've got him in another league. I'm waiting to game time to even... think about it, but probably not going to play him even if he does tentatively get some snaps.
And it's interesting the playmakers and Tony's lineup, because Hill hasn't exactly started the season on fire. Jeremy Hill, the running back, he was obviously benched in week 2 for the fumbles. Andre Johnson is looking older and slower in an offense that is struggling to really click, with Andrew Luck struggling. Evans has been banged up with the hamstring. Bridgewater's obviously been struggling, which has affected the tight end Rudolph, and Yeldon's on the Jags, who tend to be behind in games whereby they're chasing and having to put the ball into Burtle's hands. So it's just that team on paper looks good, but sometimes just because something looks great on paper, it doesn't necessarily translate to the scores. I mean, you certainly wouldn't think it would translate to only 108 yard points, 60 yard a game.
You obviously got Todd Gurley there as well on the bench, so hoping that he comes good. And you look at this team in 5 weeks' time, they could easily be scoring 120 points a week.
Yeah, especially as Manning and the Broncos figure out the shotgun eye formation.
It's whether the playmakers are out of contention at that stage if they don't pick up some wins soon enough for Tony.
Well, that's an interesting matchup there, I would say, with the Crusaders. And just one point, and a man that I think is heavily underrated and massively important to his football team is Greg Olsen, who was fantastic last week. And as much as I bag on Cam as well, Newton, and some of his antics and the way that he carries himself, you can't help deny that he is carrying that football team almost single-handedly with a bit of help along the way from Greg Olsen.
It does. It's not easy to say, but Cam is doing well, and Yeah, he's getting the job done.
Three gritted teeth. I mean, it's not spectacular, but it's certainly getting the job done, as you say.
Think about some of the things that Cam does, you still feel like he could be so much better if he's getting wins and getting the job done, despite some questionable decisions, some lack of touch still on some throws, but can make the plays when it's needed and could really be so much better. But is he the type of character that you feel like he's wanting to learn and improve and get better? He just seems to...
He just seems to riff a little bit and go along for the flow.
So, yeah, big week there for Olsen.
So, moving into the Hall of Lame League, we're taking another look at one of the bottom feeders. If that's what you want to call them. We're looking at Forest Green, who had a trade this week.
They did. James and Gronk, if you're horny, traded with Forest Green Army. So let's just try and work this one out. Forest Green have now got Lynch in exchange for Carlos Williams, who's obviously going to have a big week, probably the head, with McCourty being out for the Bills. But you look at the Green Army team now, they've got Manning at quarterback.
Just to cut you off, obviously there was some draft picks involved in that as well. So not only it is allowed Gronk, if you're horny, James to move up 7 spots down the draft.
Which he did again last year, managed to get a move up in the draft, which has benefited James again, our champion. So he's doing all right in this keeper league. So Lynch obviously should be the bigger name, but he's struggling a little bit at the moment. So
yeah, he's supposed to be a game time decision. hasn't played all week. Hasn't trained all week. So
in the long term, for the course of this season, it could be good for Forest Green, but short term this week, maybe not so.
And unfortunately for the Forest Green so far this week, they Justin Forsett had a very good week with 15 point start, and Flacco with an 8, which isn't great, but it does mean that there's 23 points already on the board against Forest Green, and with Spiller really struggling, and even to a point, Calvin Johnson not really exploding and being more of a chain mover the way that the offense is really figuring itself out there with Lombardi in Detroit.
You look at Forest Green receiver lineup and you think that should be its strength. AJ Green, Calvin Johnson, you've got Sammy Watkins injury struggling at the moment, but him and Harvin as a flex option. It should be the strength of this team, but as you say, Johnson not really making waves. Green had a big week last week, but they ended up losing as well in week 3. So you look, what are they averaging? 66, 68 points a week for Forest Green. That's a little bit disappointing for what the lineup looks like.
Yep. And another example where it doesn't necessarily translate onto the page.
So that's the Hall of Lame covered.
Going to James, who was our league champion, as you say, in the Hall of Lame, but in the Honey Badgers, the Dynasty League, has he started 0-3?
0-3, scored 305 a week.
Which is total. Deceptive a little bit, because obviously we've had the extra player.
Flex. But come up against 410 points again. So we talk about those matchup wise again. He came up against the immaculate Honey Badgers last week with 188.
Who went off.
They're doing rather well, the Honey Badgers, but...
We're quietly going about it. We don't like to talk ourselves up. We like to take every game as it comes, and we'll see where we are come January.
But just going back to the earn three Gronk, he's been playing Sam Bradford, So the same issues you've had in a couple of leagues.
Yes, once you put your eggs in the Chip Kelly basket and the basket doesn't seem to have a bottom in it, then there's a problem.
And really, looking at the youth on the receivers, Beckham and Cooper, they're going to have some big weeks, but still, you can potentially have some lesser weeks at this stage.
Yeah, and just on Cooper, Cooper has looked really, really good. And been an excellent addition, and probably one of the reasons why people are beginning to talk up Carr a little bit and saying that he's progressed as much as he has.
Yeah, that's why some people are actually even picking the Raiders to win games. Seemingly favourites to go into Soldier Field this week.
Oh man, 3-1. I mean, that's Jack Del Rio will be doing cartwheels if they can get to 3-1.
James is off to a good start
this week. Yes, he is.
15 for Fawcett again. And if there's a kicker you want these days, Tucker is clutch.
He's not just clutch, though, is he?
He's got the leg.
Technically, you know, our backgrounds are, soccer ball kind of cricket. And I always think about, whenever I've hit the ball, or hit that textbook kind of volley where you just seem to silkily stroke it and it's technically sound. You don't feel like you've leathered it. And a bit like when, you're hitting a big old six back down the ground, I'll give you that cathartic moment for you to describe that.
Well, it's the same as when you were on the golf course today. You get the timing right, you keep your head down, you get those hips involved, and you can just stroke it further when you're seemingly not trying to hit it as hard.
I really, 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 really would just want to caption that little bit and just play it to an audience and ask them, so, what's Mr. Stephen Rudkin talking about here? you just stroke it and get the hips involved and, not really too hard.
It'll go further. So, that's what Tucker does nicely. And he obviously hit the game winner and a 50-yarder.
It was really spectacular because, as you quite rightly say, he is clutch. But I think technically, when you see some of the, like Bullock was cut by the Houston Texans, and these guys are very snatchy the way they kick it, and there's no sort of for what is essentially a closed action.
I think Hauschka's got a very controlled, relaxed motion.
Without having a massive leg, he's got
a little bit more. I want to say circular with his kicking style, a little bit more rounded, so you can hit a bit more of a draw.
Hot, you knew that we had hot kicker stuff in us. This podcast is progress. It's deep, man.
Well, as I've you've been telling us this week, we need to get down the gym and get training and get ready for next year's regional combines and ourselves.
After watching Scobie kick the other day, it was just a case of, seriously, I mean, it's the fact that every kick seems to be, they're trying to kick it different and kick the skin off it. And the worst thing you can do in Heinz Field when the wind is blowing is actually try and, take the leather off the butt. No, just head down, it shouldn't matter the people that's charging at you. You just head down, concentrate on that ball. That ball is going to be there. And just kick through it. I don't know.
Strong coaching advice there. For Scobie, just kick through it. That's all he's got to do. But he, what did he push one and pull two?
Yeah, which is worrying. It's not like it's a... but at the same time, I still think that... he had the leg, and I still don't understand, despite the fact that he was kicking so poorly, why you wouldn't give him an opportunity to win the game. So,
yeah, which Tucker did, 13 points, and Gronk, if you're horny, off to a good start in the Pipe and Slippers Dynasty League. Which, quick mention, is over Bruce, who just sounds like he should be Australian. He's not, but... just wanted to mention the fact that congratulations Hawthorne on beating Bruce's West Coast Eagles today in the AFL grand final, I believe they call it.
Yeah, and one of the things it's not really a sport that I follow, but one of the things I do enjoy immensely is the fact that they are stuck in the 1980s with their shorts.
The shorts, their vests.
Yeah.
And,
grown men walking around in little sleeveless tops and hot pants.
It just doesn't seem right.
There's nothing right about it, that's why, mate.
It made me chuckle earlier. I didn't realise that this is what they call, I believe it's called the bounce up or bounce off.
Yeah, the start,
The start, the kickoff. It's hilarious. Anyway, and how the umpires have such an involvement.
That's half the fun. Just watching the umpires go crazy with the little, and doing that little thing they do now.
That works it's really obviously well on an audio podcast.
Yeah.
So, excellent. And please, Bruce's team lost, and a win there for Hawthorn. I guess that just about finishes us up here.
Yeah, is there anything else you would like to talk about while you're on the couch?
I don't think so. I mean, still leading the Pick'ems, doing all right. I'm pleased we picked up both awards this week.
Mine was especially well deserved.
Gotta trust your initial thought.
Yeah, I'm going to run down the batteries on every single media device that I've got, set it tonight and run the batteries down so I can't be even tempted.
Well, I guess we should round it off here. If you are on social media and Twitter, I am at Stephen Rudkin. My colleague is at Roger M. Kirby. It's good to have you back this week.
Thank you very much.
It was a rather lonely effort last week.
A stellar effort, nonetheless.
Did you even listen to it all?
I did.
I'm sure we lost a few followers from it.
Well, talking of followers, Anthony is doing a fantastic job with the email in the Move the Sticks, not the Move the Sticks, the Pipe and Slippers podcast. And he was saying about only getting the 6 regular guys back. Now, if you are listening to this podcast and you maybe want to receive the newsletter and you're not part of the Pipe and Slippers podcast, drop us a note on Twitter or on the Podomatic site, and we can try and get that across to you. It is extremely funny. You know, there is some absolute lines on it that are just class.
And Anthony thinks rather highly of himself, but I guess that's the editor's prerogative.
Yes, I mean, when he's talking about me parading around with my hairless body in front of my dog, and also completing nude circus in the street, and doing something not quite disclosed with Mrs. Battingworth, a 90-year-old woman from down the road.
She was most impressed.
Yeah. So that was mine, and there's some other absolutes. When guys haven't been, I have an oral fixation for a team motto that somebody's not given. I like my having my ass paddled. So maybe this is just Anthony and his kind of weird sort of thoughts just kind of getting them out there and subliminally just getting all these kind of deviant kind of ideas down on paper. But if you want to get hold of a copy, happily send you one. And if you aren't contributing and you are in the Pipe and Slippers fantasy league, please get involved, because it's well worth it, and it's engaging. And as I say, if you're not doing this to be engaged in some way, shape, or form, then I don't think you're doing it for the right reasons necessarily. It's not all about, just going out there and winning. It's supposed to be an added element and a bit of fun.
Excellent speech there, Commissioner. I guess we should call it a night there.
Oh, I've been sipping a tea. Stephen is juicing.